नमो भक्ति विनोदाय सच्चिदानंद नामिने गौरशक्ति स्वरूपाय रूपानोग वरायते।
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is worshipped with the pranam mantra or recitation of praise and obeisance that goes as follows. Namo Bhaktivinodaya, I bow down to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine, who is named Satchidananda. Gaura Shakti Surupaya, who is the very form of the potency of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rupa Noga Varayate, and who is the best of the followers of Rupa Goswami. Bhaktivinod means the joy of devotional service. Vinod, general meaning is joy. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared in this world in 1830 something. You could look it up if you like. 1834, something like this. And is known as the pioneer of the Krishna consciousness movement in the modern world. You may think 1830, well, that's not so modern. But historically speaking, that was the during his lifetime, the modern world opened up to India with the presence of the British in India, who brought mechanization, Western thought, Western systems of governance, and Western education. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was one of the first Indians to receive education in English medium. The British had a plan to de-Indianize the Indians by teaching them in English medium and giving them Western concepts of thought, which were quite different from those of Indian thought. The whole culture is different, and even though devotees who live in or visit India from the West lament India's ongoing westernization, the very fact that they lament its westernization means that it's still prominently not Western. It has its distinct culture, which is based on Vedic knowledge and the concepts of the Vedas. Just this very concept of worshipping Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Acharya, that in itself is a Vedic concept. The worship of the Acharya is essential to Vedic culture. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, what words can we say? I mean, there are words great and various synonyms, but there are no words which can properly explain the position of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Great, people use great for the Alabama Bulldogs. Or for anything. Well, the word great got hackneyed, so now awesome is the word, but it's, again, hackneyed, overused, trite. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, such a great acharya. My feeling is that he's, well, every acharya is underestimated. Srila Prabhupada's also underestimated, because you can't properly estimate his glories. But the glories of Bhaktivinoda Thakur are not nearly enough known, in my estimation, within our ISKCON society, within the broader followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That means the branches of the Gauriya Math. maybe more so there, because they sing many of his songs. I mean, in Bengal.
More so means less known or more known?
Well, maybe better known, his glories, because among the Bengali members, because they have access to his songs, they can understand them very easily. And his books, which among the small percentage of Bengali members of the Gauriya Math who are interested in reading books, the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur are very accessible compared to the writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Accessible in the matter that they're easy to read and understand, whereas Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Bengali is as difficult to the average Bengali as his English is to the average English knowing person. In other words, they're practically non-understandable. In fact, I told you about that. We have a project. I'm involved in a project with a devotee to translate Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Srimad Bhagavatam commentary into English as a guide to help to understand the Bengali. It's meant for someone to read the Bengali and understand it. It's not, the English is not easy. The translation, if you try to give a literal translation without cutting the corners and the nuances, then it becomes very difficult to understand. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, my estimation is he's underestimated. Maybe one reason is because he lived most of his life in the Grihastha Ashram. And generally people think that, well, Grihastha, they're automatically on a lower platform than a renunciant. But that is definitely not true in the case of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Really, his work should be made more widely known to the world. In recent years, within ISKCON, the works of one acharya, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, have become quite popular. Probably more relevant to us in our present situation are the works of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who, in his writings and in his activities, formed a bridge between the traditional world of Gauriya Vaishnavism and the modern world and its ways of thinking and doing things. Ways of thinking particularly by his book Chaitanya Shikamrita, which is a monumental work, which is exactly appropriate for modern man who likes to think of everything in a very rational and ordered way. This particular work is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted that widely distributed in many languages. And Jaiva Dharma also, these two books in particular, he wanted them widely distributed. They set forward the principles of especially Chaitanya Shikamrita, the principles of theology in an ordered, systematic, and very easy to understand way, in which that's why I say the interfaith, there's no need for interfaith. Just give them Chaitanya Shikamrita and study that, and everyone will see where they're at according to that standard, and then it will be clear that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's contribution is insurpassable. Just like this, we met our sidewalk philosopher this morning. Deep thinking, his friend said. So he asked, what do we think of the Knights Templar? Is that something popular nowadays? Or why Knights Templar? What do we think of the Knights? And Buddhism. They think it's mystical, is it? Yeah. As you noted, the main business was cutting people up in the Crusades. So, and he said, don't be judgmental when, Which is a stupid statement, because it's a judgmental statement by saying that. But we should be judgmental. If we're not judgmental, we cannot but be judgmental in everything that we do at every moment. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a judge or magistrate, his job was to judge. Well, he was a magistrate. The British didn't give the post of judge to Indians. Bhaktivinoda Thakur achieved the highest position that any Indian could achieve in the civil service. Or at that time it was called, what was it called? I can't remember. Now it's called IAS. But he would have, even one Englishman told him, after he retired, he came up to him and apologized and said, "I'm sorry I kept you down because I deliberately thwarted your career because I was afraid that if such an intelligent Indian, if they had position, then our own position would be undermined because the whole propaganda was that Indians are stupid." So one Englishman apologized and said, "Actually, I deliberately kept you down in your career." So we're digressing here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur formed a bridge, yeah, with his writings and with his activities, because the previous acharyas, they didn't have, after the time of Narottam Das, there was no specific preaching organization. Yeah, even Narottam, not exactly organized, but he sent, while sitting in his birthplace and preaching there to anyone who came, he sent out disciples to various places. So this was just after the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shyamananda and Rasikananda were preaching in Orissa, what's now Orissa and southwest Bengal. And Srinivasa Acharya, yeah, so these three, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, these three were sent to widely preach, but the preaching endeavor or initiative had kind of, it gradually petered out. And the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became infested with gross misunderstandings, and which incorporated gross behavioral misrepresentations of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult, which is the purest in all respects. But in Bengal, it had become mixed with various speculations influenced by the leftovers of the Sahajiya school of Buddhism, which, and Tantrism, which Tantrism incorporates sexual practice. Necrophilia, having sexual relations with dead bodies. But the Prakriti Sahajiyas of the who claimed themselves to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't do that, but they were with live bodies taking Radha Krishna's Rasalila as an excuse, which is why we had to be very careful in discussing Radha Tattva and Gopi Tattva and Vraja Lila, because the historical precedent is that if it's not propagated with a proper understanding and proper caution, then people take advantage of that to misuse Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching for their own bestial sensual enjoyment. So this was the situation in the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that the Vaishnava cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is the purest of the pure and gives the highest theological understanding, or even beyond theology. Krishna is God, he's more than God. God means the supreme controller, and he's more than that. He's this supreme happy, not just controlling. That in fact he doesn't even, anyway, we won't get into that now. So it was a very dire situation in Bengal, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur started the preaching movement, which addressed the contaminated or perverted situation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult, and also addressed various misconceptions coming in from the British or modern educational influence. And he started organized preaching, and had the vision that this organized preaching of Krishna consciousness would very soon spread all over the world. In his writings, he also formed a bridge between the traditional Vaishnavism and the present. We can say that the present Vaishnavism is the way that Srila Prabhupada has presented it is very, very circumspect in dealing with the intimate topics of Radha Krishna Leela, Gopi Leela. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was also in this manner quite circumspect. Whereas previous acharyas, they wrote hundreds of songs describing the Rasa Leela and Krishna's mostly Gopi Leelas. If the Gauriya Vaishnav Padyavali or the songs or collection of poems is mostly on Gopi Leela. Other Leelas are also described, but mostly Gopi Leela, and particularly Rasa Leela. Other Leelas also, but particularly this. So that is the Gauriya Vaishnava tradition. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, like Narottam Das, wrote songs both for beginners and for those on the higher stages or aspiring for the higher stages. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, even more than Narottam, he wrote songs which in themselves, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs themselves, cover the whole gamut of Krishna conscious topics, beginning from soul, incarcerated in material existence, bewildered by various misunderstandings, bodily concept of life, various bogus philosophies which have been propagated, various deviations and misconceptions. Bhaktivinoda Thakur covers them all in his songs and gives the path of pure devotional service right up to the highest level, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in his songs, he comes just to the edge of describing his own personal Siddha Swarup, or his eternally perfect form in Krishna Leela. And he says that hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, I run taking a pot of to fill up water as an excuse, as a housewife. And then he comes to the edge of the Yamuna River and he sees Krishna, he or she, and then he stops and says that why my weak pen will go no further. It says that considering the situation for the benefit of unqualified persons, I will not write any further here. And he gives the biblical example of the pearls before a swine, and stops at that. But in other writings, he describes that I am Kamala Manjari. He describes Ekadasha Bhav, the 11 symptoms of his perfection. So he goes right from the beginning that what is it? Amar Jivan Shada Pape Rata Nahika Punyaralish, describing himself as in my life, my life is full of sinful, I'm simply attached to sinful activities. There's not even a trace of any piety in myself. He describes himself. There are many songs in which he describes himself in this way. Many of his songs. And then he describes the life of a sadhaka, or an aspirant in devotional service. He describes all the activity of an aspirant in his, for instance, this song, Shuddha Bhakata Charanarena Bhajana Anukul, all the activities that are favorable for pure devotional service. And then he describes the highest level also in songs such as Jamuna Puline Kodamba Kanani Kiherinu Shakhi Aj. He's talking to Shakhi, it means Sakhi, a female girlfriend. He's describing just what did I see today on the bank of the Yamuna in the forest of Kadambas. And he describes Radha Krishna, how he has seen them. So he gives the whole range within his songs and within his writings, the whole range of Krishna consciousness. So in this way in his songs and in his books, he gives instruction to beginners, not even pre-beginners, those who are even in material life and desiring to come to Krishna. And he gives instruction to those who are on the path of devotional service and of those who are in the perfectional stage, or approaching the perfectional stage. So his songs in themselves are a complete course in Krishna consciousness and very valuable for devotees to sing his songs and other writings. He's written, as I said, this Chaitanya Shikamrita, Jaiva Dharma. They're very most important books for study. The opinion of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is that it is more useful for devotees in the modern age to study the works of Bhaktivinoda Thakur than those of Jiva Goswami, who codified the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu within his Shatshandharva. But they are in Sanskrit, which is difficult to understand in itself, and vast, whereas Bhaktivinoda Thakur's works in Bengali, which are easy to understand, and he has given the essence of all topics in his works. So, what he has given to the world is invaluable, and one of the tasks of our Krishna conscious movement is, is Acharya Upasana. This is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita as one of the symptoms of knowledge. A person in knowledge worships the Acharya. In fact, if we don't worship the Acharya, there's no question of having any knowledge, because knowledge is only available through the Acharya. It's not that even one can read books by oneself and become self-realized. One has to learn from and serve an Acharya. So one of our, apparently everything we do is worship of the Acharya, but particularly to establish within the world the glories of the Vaishnava Acharyas, which it's difficult to do, just like it's, even in India people don't know Srila Prabhupada so much, because there are so many bogus people and so many bogus Acharyas who to bogus people appear to be more saintly than the actual Acharyas. It's Vaishnava era kriya mudra bigeha nabhujai. those who are not Vaishnavas cannot understand Vaishnavas, and therefore we find that totally bogus people. I mean, if you just even look at a photo of this Sri Sri rascal, you know this Ravi Shankar, he's so bogus, so fluffy. And
fluffy, you said?
Fluffy means devoid of any. Guru means heavy.
Yeah, no, fluffy, I appreciate it very much.
No, fluffy means light.
Full of hot air.
Yeah.
Very good, I like it.
And smelly, too.
Bad air, full of foul air.
Yeah, really. Just so bogus. And he's supposed to be the biggest guru at the present time. Just one example. And the whole world is, oh, Mother Teresa of Calcutta. What about Prabhupada of Calcutta? He's a farmer. I mean, what has she done? It's for the benefit of the world, actually. So, but people, because they're in the bodily concept of life, they think that someone who can, and they want what is cheap, therefore someone who can give them something very cheap, they think, oh, very good. So it's difficult. People, they don't appreciate the Vaishnava Acharyas. But at least among our, in the Vaishnava society, those who are learning of Krishna and becoming Krishna conscious, they can appreciate the Vaishnava Acharyas. Actually, who said that to me? Just the other day, I was speaking to someone who said that. I'll remember some, but that when devotees come to our movement, we should give them a thorough education in all the teachings of Krishna consciousness, including the philosophical teachings and what is our history, who are our teachers. Just like if in the school they teach the history of America, I suppose they do in this country, and the great people, so that you can feel, I'm an American. I'm proud to be an American. So in the same way, when devotees join our movement, we should give them an education that we are Vaishnavas. This is our family line. We are Rupa Noga. We are followers of Rupa Goswami. What a personality, Rupa Goswami. What are his contributions? The six Goswamis and then Krishnadas Kaviraj. What a book he has written, Narottam Das says, he praises Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami for compiling Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is actually through Chaitanya Charitamrita we can understand this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, particularly. So all the acharyas, what have they done? What are their teachings? What was their contribution in the preaching mission in their particular circumstances? And we're supposed to follow in their footsteps. So of course, we are attempting to follow in Srila Prabhupada's footsteps, and Srila Prabhupada is the summation, the quintessence of all the acharyas. And actually every acharya is supposed to be representing all the previous acharyas. And that is one of the great gifts of Srila Prabhupada. Among his many, many gifts, one of them, or maybe we could say it's a summary of all his gifts, is that he did give us all the previous acharyas. But we should also know who they are individually, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, parampara jano bhalo mati. We should know very well what is parampara. That means the teachings of the parampara, the principle of parampara, guru parampara, guru shishya parampara, and who are the personalities in this song. Parampara jano bhalo mate. He lists all the acharyas, beginning from Krishna. Who's the Krishna hoite chatur mukha hoi Krishna shiva mukha. Krishna, Brahma, he became inclined to the service of Krishna. He got that from Krishna himself. So Krishna is the original guru. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had courses for devotees, two courses. One is Bhakti Shastri course, study of philosophy, the basic tenets. Well, what I mean, considerably more elaborate than our Bhakti Shastri course, as you can imagine. I mean, and another, he had the course Sampradaya Vaibhavacharya, in which he taught about the previous acharyas, not only of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, but of all the Vaishnava Sampradayas, and what were their major works and their major contributions, like this. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if I had another lifetime, I would... Someone should do. Some young man with a good brain should make a lifelong study of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Not in the... We can, when we say we want to study our acharyas, we shouldn't think like in the way that people study butterflies. Or that it's a subject that they take the butterfly as the object of knowledge. And then they say, now I've learned so much, I'm an expert on butterflies. But study the acharyas means to pray for their mercy and present ourselves as their servants and study their work, study their teachings with the aim of becoming a better servant of them. And some devotee should do this, take up this work of studying Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teachings and the whole ethos and in which he lived, his contributions, and reveal that to the world in books so that people can appreciate the glories of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. After his passing from the world, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and others organized an annual remembrance ceremony with held in Calcutta, and many of the great intellectual members of the intellectual elite of Calcutta came and they praised Bhaktivinoda Thakur for his contributions and his personality. He wasn't a recluse scholar. He was active in the world. And he met with many people, and many people were benefited by his Krishna conscious association. Generally it's thought, somehow among our devotees it's thought that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very mild and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very heavy. And there's some accusation that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur deviated from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But actually Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was, he himself stated on so many occasions, all he's doing is to fulfill the desire of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The whole Gaudiya Math was understood to be constituted only of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The only, to bring Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teachings to the world. Which is why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself, he didn't write many books. He wrote a sub-commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavad, following Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wrote many articles because Bhaktivinoda Thakur had given Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur the magazine Sajjana Toshan. He continued that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he wrote magazine articles to address various topical issues in Krishna conscious perspective, which Srila Prabhupada continued with his Back to Godhead magazine. And through the Sajjana Toshan, he also, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, brought to life much of the research that he'd done on various sampradayas and their teachings. So it's generally thought that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was quite mild, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur, well, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sometimes tolerated and mixed with people who weren't to the proper standard of devotional service. He did so because it was necessary at that time, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he first came out as a pure Vaishnava. He revealed himself to the world as such. It was a great surprise, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult was considered to be degraded and despicable. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as a respectable member of the Bengali Bhadralok, or middle class, Bhadra literally means gentle, or so Bhadralok means the respectable people. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as a member of the Bhadralok, came out as a votary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult, it was a great shock. It was just unimaginable that it was considered that no member of the Bhadralok would have anything to do with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult. It was considered so bad. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't campaign as aggressively as did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but there's no doubt that he was, from his writings, that he was very much against malpractices in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. In his chastisement of Bhishakishan, this yogi who claimed to be an avatar of Mahavishnu, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Bhishakishan was a member of the Atibari cult. So in his writings, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about the Atibaris of Orissa, and he was very much against them. He was, from his writings it's very clear that he was against all these forms. From his songs, he once, with Bimala Prasad, later to be known as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they met Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, the rascal. They were related, actually. They had some distant connection. With Vivekananda. They're both Datta. Vivekananda is also Datta, same name. So that's described in that book, this Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, that it just, in the writing it just says ra dot dot dot, but it's clear, no, it's not ra, ra dot dot dot, so it's clear it's this Ramakrishna, he would. So one man who was practically a disciple of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he approached Bhaktivinoda Thakur and said, I'm upset that my son has become influenced by this so-called avatar. So can you please go and give your judgment on this so-called avatar? So then the Ramakrishna came and he was exhibiting some ecstasies, and then there are photos of Ramakrishna exhibiting ecstasy. He looks like a ghost, possessed by a ghost. It looks horrible, actually. Some untouchable item. It just says amedha. It could be meat or fish or wine or something was brought. And Ramakrishna, he hesitated, and then he took it. And that was given as remnants to others. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur came back to his own residence, and then he lectured from Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu on this, what is that called? Chaya Ratyabhas, on the shadow, or the imitation of ecstasy, which is done by people for gaining name and fame. Mm. So there are many things. Someone has to, so much to read and study and pray to find the... Of course, we have Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teachings fully in Prabhupada's teachings, but there are many nuances which someone in a service mood, they can study that and reveal the wealth of Bhaktivinoda Thakur to the world. So, I won't say more now. It's the vast topic of Bhaktivinoda Thakur deserves elaborate treatment. Someone can give their life, or maybe at least 10 years of their life, for investigating all these things. Yes, please. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, there is the established way of not within Vaishnava society, within secular society, established way of learning or about something or someone.
The established method of learning and of research, actually, yeah.
Yes, and they consider this to be the objective method, is to observe from the outside, you don't get implicated. Mm. Otherwise, they don't think you can be objective.
Well, there is also a school which, that's within anthropology, there are two approaches, emic and etic. And the emic means to go in among the savages and become one of them and appreciate it from the inside and try and appreciate it from their point of view.
There is a...
And the etic is like from the outside, where you bring your own value systems and you study according to the understanding of anthropology. And the other system is you just go in there and become one of them and try to even adopt their whole way of thinking and everything. But they never really do.
And you go back to Oxford and write their...
Yeah, then they go back and get a PhD or something like that. There's one... Mostly nowadays the scholars are all women, right? So there was one... I can't remember her name. June McDonald or something. June McDaniel. June McDaniel. No, she studied Bengali culture.
Gotcha.
And she wrote a book called The Ecstasy of the Saints, mixing up Gorky Shodas Babaji with Shaktas and all kinds of things. And she wrote 2 or 3 books. But she's just a hippie. That's all. You can tell because she thinks tantrism's really good. Anyway, I read some of her stuff.
That was just half the... The other half is that there is a new notion, and it's sort of surfacing shyly, but that in order to properly understand the subject of study, you should drop your values and conceived notions and live.
Yeah, I just gave her as an example, but she—that's what you say. She went back to Chicago University and wrote her stuff, sympathizing or empathizing with the Bengali women and all this.
Some years ago, fortunately, I don't remember these people's names. She was some kind of a biologist, microbiologist, and she received some kind of a high award for some biological work. And she said that the way she cracked it, the way she understood it, was by trying to think like the object she studied.
So she thinks like a cell or something?
Thinking like an atom, I guess, or whatever it is. If I was DNA, what would I do? But go ahead. So what's your...
Margaret Mead is famous, American anthropologist, for her work among the savages.
Which is proven to be completely wrong, by the way. Is they it? All fed her stories because she gave them gifts.
I see.
The more lurid the story, the more they should give them a radio or some hard candy.
I see, so they made it up as they went along.
The whole thing's been rejected now.
Smart people.
Yeah, the Samoans milked her, you know.
But aren't we...
The question is so interesting. So we're going off on tangents at every word.
But so the question...
Yeah.
What I was hearing from the question was going
Was we still didn't reach it. But.
Did you get it, or I don't want to interrupt?
No, I was just trying to make a short comment.
But, oh, I see.
You know, the two approaches, and standard approach, which is a terribly arrogant approach in the Western countries, which most of many people even here when they come to Krishna consciousness maintain, is that, you know, I'll objectively observe it from the outside and make up my mind. Bogus. I mean, it's dumb.
Okay, but
how
let
can
me...
you know, you have to, and Srila Prabhupada said that many times, I mean, you can't be licking the bottom. What the heck will you learn about the honey?
Yes.
Saraswati Thakur.
Well, what about the, you know, you have, if you take the extreme example, you have like the Lord of the Flies, you know. If you surrender to a culture then and uncouple yourself from your morals and values, you can become a Nazi. I mean, you know, the mob, you can go in all kinds of weird...
In fact, directions. That's what will happen. That's the message of the Lord of the Flies.
Gotcha. So, my
isn't
question,
it that then the lower nature comes out? If without social restrictions, the lower nature comes out and you become a monster.
So my question is, there's the danger of becoming a sentimentalist or a fanatic. There's the danger of becoming a dry materialist and missing the whole point. You know, looking through life as atoms and the whole thing.
Therefore, you need a guru to guide you.
Gotcha. So what is the regulator? That's my question.
That's it. It's not a do-it-yourself process. Teach yourself pure devotional service in 30 days. It's not a do-it-yourself process.
It seems that the question begins before that, like Ryan the other day was asking. I mean, even before you submit yourself to a guru, you still have a choice of number of gurus, or, you know, how do you tell who's an authentic guru? And, I mean, Krishna gives a powerful hint in the Gita that according to our influence of the modes, we're going to worship accordingly.
Yeah.
But then he gives the standard Gita. How do they walk? How does he sit? How does he, you know?
Yeah.
It is possible to imitate it also. Because prajahati yada kaman sarvan parthamanogata, that you're free from sense gratification, but you could be, you know, doing it on the side. Yeah. So, yeah, one has to be careful. But at the same time, one also has to have faith in Krishna, that Krishna will guide me to the proper person or persons who can guide me.
So you're saying intelligent inquiry and measured
with faith in the goodness of Krishna. Yeah, also.
What I was trying to say about the Nanprabhu is that
we can't wait so long to fully analyze to the extent that we're completely sure, and even then you never can be completely sure. So you have to go ahead with some faith also.
I was trying to indicate how dumb and arrogant is to make conclusive statements about Krishna consciousness if you have not really
experienced.
That's as arrogant as commenting on a book you have not read.
Well, wouldn't people say the same thing? We analyze everything through the lens of Krishna consciousness, or yes. Krishna conscious teachings.
First verse of seventh chapter, he says, like, with mind attached to me, you should hear from me. Like, in other words, like, he's asking you to be partial of.
To look through his
lens. You have a lens. You got to pick your lens.
Yeah, well, that's... This is the acceptance of an absolute principle against unlimited, unending relativities. So, people, they say, don't be judgmental. Everything's relativistic. But, no, we accept that there is an absolute principle. Relativism is just... Like you say, you can row the boat all your life and you never get anywhere. By its very nature, relativism means that you cannot ever reach anywhere because there's nowhere to go.
Well, then if they say, well, your absolute principle, you know, how do we know that's not a relative? That, you know, is that...
It's an intelligent proposition to think that there is some particular principle underlying everything, that everything's not just simply by chance. Actually, this feel-good spiritualism, where it's just based on feeling, is just an extension of the pseudo or so-called scientific relativism. It's supposedly spiritual relativism, which is just an extension of the whole worldview of, in the academic circles, of relativism, that we, you can't really know anything, you can't really properly define anything, so it just comes. And then in the spiritual sense, or so-called spiritual, then it's just all feeling. It's just the same disease also of failing to recognize that there is the absolute principle. As Srila Prabhupada, what I see, that among all the many things that Srila Prabhupada taught, there are two principles that he stressed on most of all. The first thing is that we are not the body. We are eternal, and the body is temporary, but we do not die when the body dies. And the second is that we are controlled. Everyone should recognize we are controlled, therefore we should recognize that there is a supreme controller. On these two principles, Prabhupada built his whole preaching. In the world of people who don't accept Vedic knowledge, he began with these two logical principles, and then from there everything else can be developed.
So, when you arrived to Laguna Beach, Srila Prabhupada asked the audience whether they want to be controlled by the drug or by Krishna.
It was a big drug area at that time. Still now?
No.
I think people are more into yoga and clean living and all this kind of thing. But it's not.
Back then was the Mecca.
It was, yeah. But now there's no Mecca because it's just everywhere.
Exactly. That's the accurate analogy.
Welcome to the Mecca's come to me.
Like that philosopher we met this morning, he said about him, he's learning to levitate out of body experience without using drugs. Well, apart from alcohol and cigarettes.
So those are drugs. He said.
Anyway, at least he fancies himself as a philosopher of sorts. Yes?
One last thing. So it seems like we stress that one has to have intellectual discrimination or enough intellectual power to be able to discriminate what is right and what is wrong.
Definitely.
So, okay, this pastime of Krishna and the Dvijapanis.
Yeah.
Okay, so that obviously clearly demonstrates that, you know, they had a lot of philosophical knowledge, but still they weren't able to recognize the Supreme, or...
Are you talking about the Dvijas or the Dvijapatnis?
The Brahmins.
The Brahmins,
but
yeah.
In that pastime, my understanding of that pastime was that they weren't very philosophical or intellectual, but they had the devotion. So obviously...
Who are you talking about? The Dvijapatnis? Yeah. You're getting mixed up here.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So...
He writes like that too.
So it seems like, yeah, because, you know, with the Bhakti Fest and all this, it's like, what's our main criticism is that, you know, people aren't using their intellectual discrimination power to see, like, what's pravartam and nivartam, like, what's correct, what's incorrect.
Well, we have, there are various verses, just like in Bhagavad Gita, Vedeshu, Yagyeshu, Tapasu, Chaiva. And then we have in the... Srimad Bhagavatam, Ahobata Shvapacha Togariya, the persons who come to the stage of purely focusing on Krishna, it's understood they've been through all other processes previously. The Dvijapatnis, their attention was fully on Krishna, which is the right point. If it had been on Kamsa, then it would have been the wrong point.
But
probably Putana, she wasn't a big intellectual.
But
following her feelings, she was a demon. So what's the difference between her and the Dvijapatnis? It's cultivation. It's not just in one life, but in previous lives, just like we say, yeshang twandagatang papang jananang punya karmana. The persons who in this life and in previous life executed pious activities, so they take to my devotional service.
Go through the intellectual process in order to achieve Krishna.
Discrimination is certainly required. Without discrimination, then we're just stones or animals.
I accept that, but couldn't we? Aren't there instances of, I'm trying to think one of quickly.
There are devotees who are very simple and not very
innocent and humble, and it makes sense. And then they get deep realization after that act of surrender, and in the process, Krishna enlightens.
Well, that's why we need acharya. That's why the gopis come as the Goswamis and write books of philosophy, so that people can get their association and be guided. Most people are not very intellectual. They'll be guided by. Society is guided by people with worldviews. And therefore, it's required. Srila Prabhupada wanted a class of brahmanas who could give proper understanding so that everyone else can follow. It's not expected that everyone will be an intellectual, but if they get good association, then they can come to the highest perfection even without being intellectual. It's not required to be. It's not required to be intellectual, but it is required that one get on the right path. But if there aren't people on the right path who can understand what is the right path and guide others through all the subtleties that arise of misunderstanding, then the world is in an unfortunate situation. So it is required that all these points be understood, at least by a class of person, because misunderstandings are often subtle. And that's why we'll see that some of our devotees, who are initiated in Krishna consciousness because they haven't deeply tried to understand the teachings of the acharyas, of the shastras given by Srila Prabhupada, then they can't clearly distinguish between the wishy-washy Mayavad so-called bhakti of bhakti fest and pure devotional service in the line of Rupa Goswami. And at the time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so many people thought, and even now, Ramakrishna, great saint, the incarnation of Rama and Krishna. But it takes a Vaishnava Acharya to point out that, hey, this man's completely bogus.
Very quick question. What are the three traits that any true guru should have?
Why three? That means you know what they are already.
I don't. I have an idea.
Why do you think there should be three?
It shouldn't be too short nor too long.
Really? That means you're already defining it. Then you're a guru.
I'm thinking humility is one, a major one.
You need to learn from a guru.
Two, generosity.
How to ask questions is the first thing you have to learn. The first quality, the quality from which all qualities come is firm, unflinching devotion to Krishna with complete surrender. From that, all other qualities come. All other qualities without that are completely useless. They serve no ultimate purpose whatsoever. Which is why, like I say, all these saints, Mother Teresa, Vivekananda, Dalai Lama, they don't have that. So they're all just, pious fish swimming in the pond of material existence.
It is
pious. Pious, maybe. Some of them. Vivekananda didn't have any piety.
Misleading so many.
Yeah, they are misleading. Yeah, their piety is also misleading. Piety is also... some piety.
After Mother Teresa died...
Yeah, it came out that she didn't believe in Jesus anyway.
She had a crisis of faith for 40 years.
Yeah.
That's a long stretch.
But she was living in Calcutta. Where she must have heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. She had no attraction to him. She wanted to convert followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu into meat-eating Christians like herself. I mean, if she was actually serious about God realization, then She should have been attracted to Chaitanya. She should at least stop in India, where it's known that meat eating is not proper standard for a saintly person. She should have stopped meat eating. I'm not impressed. And in
that
fact,
the cause of her crisis of faith. She's committing offenses in the Dham.
In Calcutta, no one took much attention to her until the Western press hyped her up.
Marge?
Now you're
ahead. But I was just thinking that on one hand, the reason the media hypes these people is because it's all within their norm. In other words, she wasn't really asking them to do anything beyond what they're... She never asked them to give up meat. She never asked them to give up so much.
She did speak against abortion.
All right. That. Fine.
Yeah, but she didn't need them to ask them to give up meat or wine or anything like that. Yeah.
Their saints have to and fit within their parameters, their day-to-day life.
Right, right. And this whole thing of serving the poor, like it's the greatest thing you can ever do. But her serving the poor didn't make even a slight dent in the poverty of Calcutta. It is completely ridiculous. They have a home for dying people. People spend their whole life on the street dying, and then her nuns go out and search for someone who's dying on the street and bring them to her home so they can die in her home after they spend their whole life on the street. And if they get better and don't die, then they throw them out again. It's completely ridiculous.
You can actually rotate. Almost die, bring him back. Almost, they can torture you in this way. Just let him die.
In some leper's colony. Yes. There's so many welfare workers. Somehow she got hyped up.
Couldn't it be argued of...
anything can be argued.
So I think persons of different faiths that... they're just sort of on like a lower part of the path. So, I mean, for instance, back.
Yeah, it can be said like that also, but I don't know if Mother Teresa is really on the path to Krishna. Dalai Lama definitely isn't.
But what about in Bhagavatam, where Srila Prabhupada says one should not criticize a person's mode of worship because that's what they need for their purification?
It may be better for them. It's probably better for Dalai Lama, for Mother Teresa to be Mother Teresa than joining the Hell's Angels. But the point is that it's so hyped up, like it's really, this is saintliness.
That's the problem. That it's a summum bonum, or it's a conclusion.
Yeah, it's presented as this is the ultimate level. So, for herself, is she doing a little bodily service like that in the name of Jesus? Okay, but then to get it like that. One thing they had, it's so many things. They're huge sums in the bank, which they didn't release. For they could have helped people a lot more, but they just had a huge, huge bank balance, millions of dollars in their bank balance. In the Sisters of Poverty, whatever they're called. So we're talking here among ourselves. It's not necessary that we go into the public and tell. And we're not on a campaign against. I'm just pointing out that really saintly persons like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, they go unnoticed. Whereas people who, there's so many bogus things about them that they're painted as great saints when they actually have some, apart from contradictions in their character and their teachings, they actually have some demoniac traits. So at least our devotees shouldn't be carried away. Someone wrote to me a few years ago and said this, a devotee, and said that she had been advised by other devotees to learn to be compassionate by studying the life of Mother Teresa. Well, Mother Teresa? What? We have Prabhupada, we have all the acharyas, and we're going to study Mother Teresa? It's ridiculous.
Envy, huh? Hmm? Is it not envy that they don't want Krishna to be supreme? And these acharyas?
Definitely, there's that element is there. Within what is propagated as Christianity in the world today, there's a very strong motive of envy of Krishna. They should, I mean, actually, if they were serious to follow Jesus, then they should come to Krishna. If Jesus was here now, he'd be a member of the Hare Krishna movement. Right? It's the best thing going on. It whatever he taught is fulfilled a millionfold over by the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But if you don't recognize that, when you can say you're not very, they're not actually very sincere about God consciousness. They're just in some sectarian matrix.